This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
A Gal Media property. Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Wake up!
All right, glad you could be with us on this Memorial Day. Hope you're having a good weekend. Did you watch the match? Did you see the two quarterbacks and the two golfers raise $20 million for charity? Yeah, I watched it on and off. I got enough of it to be very, very entertained by it. It was a lot better than what people said the first match was between Phil and Tiger. Well, it was about a year and a half ago, about Thanksgiving in 2018. That was for real money, money that they could keep. But that was one of those where the broadcast went kapooey and they ended up giving away for free, but people still thought the golf was terrible and wasn't really as entertaining as people thought. This was everything you wanted out of it. They had some trash talking. Everyone was mic'd up, even though some of the communication was some problems. Peyton Manning was very funny. Phil was being very, educational. Tiger was having a good time. Brady wasn't playing good. Then Brady was playing good. So there was a lot to really like about it, but I think the biggest thing to like about it was the money that was raised. It was very cool to hear during the match that people were calling in and, you know, celebrities were saying, I'll donate $50,000 to this and I'll donate another $1 million for this or whatever it was. But in the end, they got what they wanted. They provided a very entertaining broadcast. Even though it was wet and rainy and soggy, there was a lot of good golf out there to be watched, especially by Tiger, who hit all 14 fairways. I was his home course, so, you know, he has that advantage, but still it was pouring rain down there in South Florida. So you expect a couple, and he had a couple of holes where it was the longest drive. So in those holes, you're supposed to kind of rip it, you know, as fast as you swing it. Yeah, might as well just try to hit it out as far as you can. So he hit all. He had not played competitive golf way before the quarantine. I mean, he pulled out of the Players Championship before. I mean, that was a tournament that got shut down because of the quarantine. But he had pulled out of that event because of back tightness. So it was good to see Tiger playing well. So we'll have more on that, plus the Coca-Cola 600 that went on this weekend. A lot to get to today, including NBA's plan of return. Again, glad you could be with us here on Wake Up Call. It is SB Nation Radio.
Listening to Wake Up Call, presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, glad you could be with us again. Happy Memorial Day to you as we celebrate those who've made the sacrifice for those of us to be here and do radio and talk sports and watch sports when sports is available, including the match yesterday. Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods, along with Tom Brady and Peyton Manning, $20 million. They raised, which was $10 million more than a week ago with the TaylorMade guys. So it's golf did its part. There are about $30 million they raised for COVID-19 relief. And they provided an entertaining show to all four involved. So congratulations, I guess, are in order to Woods and Manning for winning one up in the tournament. Like I said, I watched it on shabby. And off, and it was very entertaining. You watched the whole thing?
I ended up watching the whole thing. I mean, I may have missed like a hole or two. I kind of missed, the early teens, or right. Actually not even the teens, like 12 and 13. Because then all of a sudden, I mean, I stopped watching when they were two up. Then all of a sudden it was one up. I'm like, oh, okay.
We got to get back into it. Yeah.
We got ourselves a game here. We got ourselves a match.
First of all, what a nice, nice golf course was.
That one looks, I mean, except for how narrow it was off the tee. I think I could play that one and be okay.
That was a nice place. I mean, listen, I didn't expect it to be at my local nine-hole, Muni. Muni. Yeah, I mean, I didn't expect that, but It was a beautiful golf course. And you find out, if you did a little research, one, down in that area of South Florida, that's where a lot of pro golfers live. And they're all members. Like, so many members are make that their home. Ricky Fowler's a member there. Brooks Koepka, Justin Thomas works out there. Tiger works out there. There's a whole group of them that live in that area and are members at that club. So, you know, that's Tiger's home course. So he's, you know, obviously that's where he works out. So he knows the course pretty well. But it was a beautiful course, nice layout and like good area around the greens. Like you'd miss the green. And there was still plenty of area around the green to do some magic with the short game. But it needed to be, and we've been saying this all the way leading up to it. It needed to be a television show as well as a fun golf event. If you're gonna have something, even when we're just dying for sports content, if you're going to have a match like this, that the selling point isn't going to be the golf. The selling point is going to be the entertainment along with the golf, because there's only so many golf fans that will watch broadcast. Even if it's between two of the best golfers, with a ton of name recognition like Phil and Tiger, and you throw in Brady and Manning, if you're going to mic them up and you're going to get them out on the golf course and they're the only act that's out there, you need it to be funny, entertaining. You need to have some nice banter. You need to, you know, hear what they're thinking, et cetera, et cetera. And I think this was executed well. Sure, there were glitches. I mean, there were times where the players couldn't really hear and, you know, didn't know they were on. And then those are little technicalities. Overall, I thought they did a great job. They did a really great job.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I stuck true to form. I said, you know, I got to tune in just for a little bit. I just want to see what's going on, hear what's going on. And I was expecting it to be a lot like last week's with Fowler and McIlroy and Johnson, you know, where the golf was good, obviously, because you're dealing with some of the top players in the world. But the banter wasn't that great.
Right, right.
And this, I don't know, it was more entertaining. I don't know if it was because of the addition of Barkley as well. Barkley had a lot of, just seemed like a fun element to it all.
Yeah, he really did.
And I might suggest that in the future, maybe you bring him on as a golf analyst.
Well, I would bring him on as a golf analyst on those things.
I mean, maybe not an analyst.
You know, he was funny. I mean, he really was funny.
Well, he kept it entertaining.
Yeah, and that was the key. I mean, again, you're trying to keep viewers interested, again, because they're raising some money and you're trying to, you know, raise awareness and all that other stuff. But overall, I think when you have an event like this, where you have two rivals and then two other rivals, you kind of want to hear them talk. And
yeah.
I think they opened themselves up to that, and it was kind of fun.
We heard the greatest nickname ever.
Pay Dirt.
Pay Dirt.
Which I mean, nobody ever mentioned before.
I have never heard that. I mean, is that buried in a book somewhere, like a Tom or Peyton autobiography or biography or something that we've, you know, just quickly glanced over? I had never heard that nickname, and I was loving it.
I loved that nickname, and I was like surprised nobody ever came up with it.
Right.
No one ever. I never heard that. Now, maybe, I mean, I've been out of the Denver media a long time. Maybe some local Denver guy wrote it. But if somebody had wrote it in Denver, it would have.
Oh, you would have heard it.
Nationally, I would have heard it.
Yeah, we would definitely heard it, because it's the perfect nickname.
Yeah, it's really good.
And from it coming from Brady only made that much more sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, I mean, in a way, you can kind of say, well, it's kind of like a little rip, but at the same time, it's endearing, I guess.
One of the things about it, and I give Peyton Manning and Tom Brady a lot of credit, because they're athletes and they're competitive and they've got a lot of pride, but they're out of their element, right? They're playing with two pros who get to showcase their skill. And this is the one thing that golfers, pro golfers, get that other athletes don't get. Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, they will never be able to play an NFL game with amateurs to showcase what they do. But golfers are always, always, always paired up with people so they can showcase what they do. It's the ultimate, right? So, I mean, Mickelson has done a few things with baseball, like where he's thrown out a pitch and he stepped in a plate at like a Toledo Mudheads game and things like that. But for the most part, athletes always go to golf, right? And so for them to be sort of the, you know, for them to be the less than, that in an event when they were always the top A-list guys in their sport. I give them a lot of credit because an athletic mindset, a professional athlete mindset, usually does not lend itself to that. And Peyton Manning he's kind of got a built-in self-deprecated humor type of thing, which kind of adds to that. But you could tell early on in the match that, you know, Tom Brady was not comfortable. I mean, again, no. he was not comfortable. He's really bad. He was really bad.
Well, I mean, but that was inviting.
Yeah, it was
because
inviting,
I mean,
sure.
When you're watching that, it's like, yes, that's all of us.
Yeah,
that's how we would play. I mean, he couldn't hit a fairway to save his life.
He couldn't hit anything. I mean, I felt bad for him because he had one shot where there was like a little thing of water and he found it.
Yeah.
on the hole that was the one club challenge, which
right.
I've done those one club challenges before. You'd usually find an iron or something that's just going to get it in the fairway. Well, he took a 5-iron and he hooked a 5-iron into water that's on the left hand side of the course.
But how great was it when he had to do the drop and he's asking like, okay, where do I put this?
Yeah, where do I put this?
Because we're all that way. We're like, okay, you know what? Do I just drop it here? And he's like, well, you can drop it in the sand, but it's going to roll, or grass, but it's going to roll in the dirt. So should I just drop it in the dirt then?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he said it's just going to roll down. I was playing in a media tournament one time in Denver, and this was by the book rules. And I remember I hit this one drive that I thought I clobbered. And when I got to it, it had run through the fairway and went out of bounds. And I normally, you know, I don't play by strict rules. I just either A, hit it from where I was,
yep.
or B, I would just drag it back into the course.
Yeah.
And when I got there, the guy told me, he's like, you got to go back to the tee. And I was like, I got to go back to where?
Yeah.
He goes, you got to go back to the tee and hit again. I go, what? And he goes, yeah. He goes, it's, and then that's your third shot from back there.
And listen, you know,
I was what? So I sympathize with Brady because I was like, if I hit the water, I just go, there's some grass, plop. I don't break out the driver and measure out two clubs.
Part of me wants to offer up a rule change to the PGA. I mean, I know that part of the PGA is that you have to walk the course. We've seen it over and over again. There was something about them just, you know, those little moments when they were driving off the tee and they're driving to find their ball. And that, you know, they had the camera in the car and the microphones.
Yeah,
all stuff.
That was nice.
It was entertaining.
It was entertaining.
You know, I mean, you can get some golf knowledge. You just get some fun banter, you know, just them talking about themselves, you know. And it was like, I found the whole thing enjoyable.
It was very enjoyable. And by the way, I want to give a shout out to whoever makes those golf carts. If you want to come here to Tennessee and drop off a couple of those at my local course, I wouldn't mind it. Those looked really comfortable. Like I could take a nap in one of the golf
that
carts.
Or, you know, just even the graphics on the outside.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, they did them all up nice for each player, their logo on it, and name. And yeah.
Imagine that if the PGA Tour did adopt golf carts, that's a whole new revenue stream.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, Peyton Manning looked like he was sponsored by everybody.
Oh, I know.
I mean, he had Colts on one side, Broncos on the other, you know,
yeah,
Tennessee.
Yeah, fantastic. Fantastic. So again,
I didn't know. Did Brady have a Buccaneers? I didn't notice. He just had TB12, right?
I did not notice. He had TB12. I did not notice. So we'll have more on the match throughout the show today. Again, a very good event yesterday for charity. And well done. One other point, though. There was a moment in the day where they kept saying, you know, I was watching Twitter, and they kept saying how it was pouring in Florida, right? They said, it does not look good. There is, you know, it's raining, cats and dogs, et cetera, et cetera. It looks like it's going to rain all day. Outside of a lightning storm, if there was lightning, they wouldn't have played. But I kept wondering if they would cancel it. And I went back and forth with this. And I said, okay, not cancel, but maybe postpone, maybe play today or something. Now, I know these guys are all on a schedule. Some of them have commitments. You know, they're all businessmen outside of being athletes. So I didn't know what that meant. If Peyton Manning was supposed to be at some Memorial Day event today or whatever. But I started going,
Tom Brady's
look,
got to break into someone's house.
Yeah, Tom Brady's got to break into somebody's house. But I did think about this for a second. If I was in that group, if I was one of those four guys, and it was only raining, meaning there was no lightning, so I didn't have to worry about that kind of danger, how bad of a look would it be if four rich professional athletes couldn't play 18 holes of golf in rain when the charity is for people who have lost their jobs, struggling, dealing with a lot of emotional issues due to COVID-19, right? Medical issues, all that stuff. I think it would have been a terrible look. I'm glad they played. I'm glad they played in the rain. I'm glad they played in the rain and dealt with all of the stuff in the rain. Because Phil and Tiger, Phil talks about this all the time. When Phil can play in the rain, which doesn't rain a lot in Southern California, but when he can play in the rain, he always plays in the rain. Always. Because he says, you know, when you're at the British Open, they don't cancel, right?
Right.
So you have to play. You have to play golf as a professional golfer.
Just short of a hurricane.
That's right.
Hitting the British Isles.
That's right. So you have to be able to play in the rain. You have to play in horrible, horrible conditions. So these guys go out and practice in horrible, horrible conditions when it's safe. Manning and Brady probably don't. Manning and Brady probably play when it's nice. And when it's not nice, they probably go, all right, my buddies will do something else.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll do it tomorrow. So it was great to see them not postpone this thing for the look and make it sunny. You know, I'm glad that they said, you know what? We're raising money for charity. And if we can't be out here in the pouring rain when people are really suffering out there, I give them props because I wouldn't have played in rain. Like, I don't play in rain. I don't like it. I don't like getting wet. I don't like what the ball does. I don't like my grips getting slippery. I don't hate it. So I don't play. But if it was for charity, I would. I mean, I would because I think you need to do that, and I'm glad they all did that. I'm glad the broadcast went on and the match went on, and I was glad they did it. It was great. I taped it. I watched it sporadically yesterday. I'm hoping to catch more of it on the rewatch because I thought it was very entertaining. So it was very good. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, Ron with two N's as we continue along. It is Wake Up Call on SB Nation Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now. Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. It is SB Nation Radio. It's Wake Up Call. Tony D, Ron Culver. If you want to hit us up on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. I am glad you could join us. When your battery goes dead, everything can come to a stop, so don't take a chance on getting stranded. O'Reilly Auto Parts will test your battery free of charge. If your battery needs to be replaced, O'Reilly Auto Parts can help you find the exact battery that fits your car or truck at a guaranteed low price. Make sure your vehicle is prepared for the weather ahead by getting your battery tested for free at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. All right, so here is some audio from the match. What do we got? Tom Brady.
This is Tom Brady's shot.
Okay, the shot.
Where I want to liken it to, you know, nobody's going to remember the match, but everyone's going to remember that 12.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what it kind of felt like.
I think you just made him mad, Chuck.
Oh, no, I love it, though, man. He can take a joke.
Wow.
Hey.
Oh, that's awesome.
That was fantastic.
That is fantastic.
The best part about that was just Chuck was just roasting him right before.
I know. Unbelievable.
And then he just steps up. And then, I mean, Twitter exploded. And it was just all of a sudden. Because, I mean, before that, everyone's ripping Brady. Because Brady, I mean, basically was us. You know, missing fairway. I mean, could, like, you know, 100-yard fairway wide, and he was finding dirt, water, everything. And then he steps up and he hits that one.
It was awesome because he was, again, it's, look, I'm not overly sympathetic to Tom Brady.
No, not at all.
But here's the deal. He's exposed out there. He's playing terrible. And it's hard when you're playing terrible. It's hard when you're, you know, good at something, really, really, really good at something, and then you get kind of put into these things where you're like, I'm not as good at this. I'm struggling with this, right? It's hard.
J.J. Watt had a tweet, or I don't know if it was part of the conversation or it was a tweet, because somebody had asked him, like, hey, you know, when are you going to get out there and play with these guys? Or, you know, when are you going to do something like this? And J.J. had put down, like, when throwing clubs is acceptable on TV.
Yeah.
and then at some point just before that, he said Brady's about two strokes away from tossing this club now. Because, I mean, that's what it felt like. Or that he was just going to snap it over his knee. Because we've all been there.
So you sit there, it's like, man, I have not played this bad. And then, you know, obviously we're going to harp on the fact that he's saying he's an 8 handicap. Going, you know what? If that's true, then I'm an 8.
Yeah, I know. I'm not an 8. I mean, he's not an 8. He's not an 8. He might be an 8 on a good day on his course, but he's not an 8. He doesn't have a par 3 course.
He's an 8. I don't know.
Listen, he doesn't have an 8 handicap swing. I don't care what his numbers are. His body goes up every time he hits a shot. His body went up, and that's where you're going to lose. You're going to lose your accuracy, your ability to drive the ball in, and get the ball into a straight flight. But I thought it was awesome because at one point I was like, oh, this poor guy's going to just quit. And poor Phil. Phil is just trying so hard to pump him up. And Phil's uber competitive. And he's starting to realize, like, well, Manning's making a birdie on the par 3. My guy's all the way in the rough and the woods and the trees and the bunker.
Real quick, can we give it to our boy Phil for driving a par 4 to the – to the green?
Yeah, 330.
God.
That's awesome.
Can you imagine being able to do that?
I know. That guy's, well, at his age.
Oh, no, we're not going to bring age into it, Tony. You know? Come on now. He's fine.
He's 50 years old.
He's a young kid.
He is 50 years old. No, I'm not even joking. I'm not going to joke about it. He's 50.
But he is
50 years old. He hit it 330.
He drove that like it was no problem.
He hit it 330 in Florida where there's no altitude.
Right.
So he's not even getting help with altitude. He's hit. That's
a
awesome.
Little wind, maybe.
A little wind, and in the rain where the ball doesn't go as far.
Yeah.
So that's fantastic. I mean, he is great. I mean, this is the one thing that people talk about with golfers, like good amateur golfers who are trying to make it pro. Right. There's always this idea that you could just go on the senior tour. Like, well, they'll just go to the senior tour. The senior tour is where 50-year-old professional golfers go. Like, it's not a place for bad golfers. Phil Mickelson could play on the Champions Tour in 2 months. And he would be, you know, and that those courses are shorter, they're easier, they're meant for you to go to 14 under, 13 under. Phil can do that on a pro tour today at 50 years old. It's that years and years ago, I mean, I want to talk about early 90s. It was guys just could not wait till the clock on their time clock turned 50 where they could go to the senior tour because they couldn't compete. They couldn't hit the ball as far. They didn't have the equipment to do it. Phil keeps himself in great shape for 50 years old.
Oh man, can we spend a segment on those calves?
I know, man.
Those calves were flexing.
Yeah. He's great. I mean, he's great. But you know what? Also, I got to back off a little bit. It's his job. So he's supposed to be good at his job, right? I mean, that's it. And his job is to, like, we get up every day, we prep this show, we do this show. He gets up every day and he hits 1,000 chip shots.
Yeah.
So when he has a chip shot, he better get it close because that's what he gets paid to do. People pay him. Callaway pays him a ton of money to hit it 300 yards. They don't pay him a ton of money to look pretty out there. They pay him money to be excellent at that sport.
They paid him to drive that par.
Exactly.
That par 4.
So he's got to go do that. Same with Tiger. I mean, these guys, I always go back to something Penn Jillette said one time when he was talking about being a magician. And he said to one lady who was asking him about it, and he said, what do you do? And she's like, I'm an accountant. And he goes, well, how long do you spend being an accountant? He goes, you know, 8-9 hours a day. He goes, well, that's how long Penn and I do tricks. How long we practice tricks. Like when it's your 1 o'clock on a Tuesday and you're working on this, Penn and I are working for the 5,000th time, the ability to take that thing and hide it in our sleeve. That's the same thing with these guys. The PGA Tour, when they had that slogan, these guys are good, I thought it was a stupid slogan because you're supposed to be good.
Yeah.
It's what you do for a job. Your job is to wake up, go to a golf course, hit 5,000 shots, and then go home. And then wake up the next day and hit 5,000 more shots and go home and, you know, and sleep.
God, can you imagine? I mean, a bucket of balls ruins me the next day.
Oh, I thought about it. Like, I thought, could I hit 500 shots and I can't do it. Yeah. I get bored. I don't want to do it anymore. I go, okay. And for them, it's going to be more boring. It's going to be more boring because they're hitting the 7-iron. At what point do you go, I got this down. What am I doing with this? I got this down.
At what point do you sit there and go, man, if I hit the 7-iron one more time, I'm going to develop a bad trait.
I know.
It's going to carry with me.
Exactly. But man, it was very, very good. All right, I'll get into a little auto racing coming up. So I want to give the Coca-Cola 600 some love, but we've also got NBA plan to return, and it looks like it's going to be with the mouse. It's all coming up on Wake Up Call, ESPN Nation Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call, presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. It is Wake Up Call, ESPN Nation Radio. As we continue along after yesterday, two events that went down, live sports. You had the match, and then you had the Coca-Cola 600 NASCAR running at Charlotte Motor Speedway. No fans in attendance again. There won't be for a while, but nevertheless, they still ran the longest race on the schedule. And when it was all said and done, it was Brad Keselowski in overtime, beating out Jimmy Johnson for the win, as he picks up his first win of the season and his first Coca-Cola 600 victory of the year. It was a good race. I watched a little bit of that last night, too. Kind of watched a little bit of everything, just you know. Coca-Cola 600 is a long race. It is one of those races that... it starts during the daytime and it runs into night, and it's the adjustments that you can make on the car. And so that's the one cool thing about the race, is that as the temperature goes down, as the sun goes down, then you get like the engineers and the crew chiefs are making adjustments on the car as it's going. But the one other thing about that race that is... It's long, so what it is it's a tribute to the engine departments. It used to be a tribute to the engine builders who could build an engine that would go under that kind of strain for that long. And so it's one of those crown jewel events because there's no other race on the schedule that runs that long. And, you know, there's a combination of a couple of things. There's, you know, it's not just the driver for his endurance. It's also the people who are setting up the car and making the car run as well as it is. So it was... It's lost a little bit of that over the years, where it's not, you know, the technology is sort of advanced, so that kind of the durability issue, if you will, is not really that important. But it's still a long race, and it still does account for a lot of endurance. I used to think that it's funny, when I never got into racing before, I had totally did not know. I didn't know anything about it, to be honest with you. And I was given the assignment when I was younger. My boss was like, I don't work weekends, and the second guy, he doesn't really want to do this. He doesn't like it. So this is your beat if you want it. And as a young kid, I was like, of course I want it. I want anything that you can give me. But I remember I didn't know anything about the sport at all. Like, I didn't know I didn't know what the rules were. I didn't know, like a caution flag, for example. Like, for me, I saw a driver would have like a half a lap lead, and then they would throw out the caution. They would all bundle up together. And I thought that was like unfair. I was like, how does that happen? Like, the guy's got a lead. Now he's got to blow. And they're like, yeah, it's just a thing. That's just the way they do it. But I remember the Coca-Cola 600 because as an early part of my NASCAR coverage was, this was the race again that people would say, hey, you want to watch this because this is where the drivers, the endurance of being in a hot race car and muscling that car all the way through, through the turns. And I used to have this kind of image of this guy just wrestling with the vehicle. And it wasn't really like that. I was a little disappointed. But nevertheless, it was still, it was a very important race. It was also the first race that Jeff Gordon won in his illustrious career. And a lot of people, you know, because NASCAR had its moment in the sun, many, many years ago, like in probably early 90s, there was a moment where NASCAR was really, really popular. I mean, it was on the cover of Sports Illustrated as a rising sport and all of that. And a lot of it had to do with this kid from California/Indiana that was making big waves. He drove this very colorful rainbow car. The young kids were liking him. He was going after the old dogs of the sport, including Dale Earnhardt at the time. And he won the Coca-Cola 600. And that was his first race. It was 1994. And that was the first race that he won. And he ended up, you know, obviously becoming one of the Hall of Fame drivers in the sport. But what people started, like, when they started thinking about whether this kid could race at in the NASCAR level, and what that was the race that if you could show that kind of endurance, that kind of concentration, that kind of ability at a race like that, where it's about pacing, not taking opportunities, you know, not, when you see him just having to back off a little bit and saying, wait, my opportunities will come later. You know, all of those things that people really kind of opened up their eye at the time to what this kid could do. And then he ended up that year not only winning that race, but months later at Indianapolis, NASCAR went to the Brickyard for the first time ever, and it was a mega deal. I mean, it was gigantic for the sport to be racing stock cars at a place where the Indy cars raced. I remember there was a joke that there was going to be gasoline finally at Gasoline Alley at the Brickyard in Indianapolis. And he won that race, too. And he won that race in front of over 300,000 people at packed the stands to watch him race there. So the Coca-Cola 600 was always I always considered it the stepping point of people's knowledge of Jeff Gordon. And it's still a crown jewel race. It's unfortunately, because the crowd wasn't there last night, really didn't have that feel when Brad Keselowski won, but it still goes in the books of him winning that event. They'll race again on Wednesday. So they're really trying to get some exposure since coming back from the pandemic, trying to get on TV, get those sponsors on TV, and make some noise. So you had that in the match, and it was kind of a cool weekend for that, because they were, like I said, it's Memorial Day weekend. If your weather was good, maybe you got together with some people as much as you could in your area. I don't know how restricted a lot of you are, but maybe you got together for a barbecue, or maybe you got together with just a few family and friends. Again, it used to be like you'd have the whole neighborhood over. Now, some places you can't even have the whole neighborhood over, but it was nice to have a couple of live sporting events on, things to look forward to on the calendar. Not a full boat of everything, but enough. And that leads me into this next conversation, the NBA. A lot of news this weekend about the NBA coming back. It's something Ron and I, we've talked about the possibility of playing in Disney World or Las Vegas. And now it looks like the plan is to go to Disney World. That's what's on the table. The governors and the board of governors in the NBA are going to be voting on this. This idea stems from the fact that there is a way to do this in an isolated area that has plenty of hotel accommodations and has three basketball courts, and you don't have to be amongst the public. For those of you who know Disneyland and have never been to Disney World, have never been to either park, Disney World is to just give you a quick theme park history, when Walt Disney bought the land for Disneyland in Anaheim, there was nothing but orange trees and orange groves around the area. So he built his park, made it a little isolated, but was building it out. What happened was he didn't buy enough land. So he didn't buy the land around the park. So when hotels were starting to spring up and restaurants were springing up around the park, nobody wanted to sell it because it was a cash machine. So why even Disney was, always borrowing money for the park. So he wasn't sitting on billions of dollars to buy all of this land that other people owned that wanted to make money for generations when they, had a hotel right across the street from Disneyland. So as Disneyland was getting really popular, he wanted to have a second park. But what he did was he kind of created a real estate company, and using a number of, lots and lots of different agents, he kept buying up these parcels of swampland in Central Florida. And he wanted to build his second park, but he wanted to do it in a way where nobody could build anything around it. So he wanted it completely, completely isolated. So he built it in the center of Orlando. And what he did was he put it way out there. So it's not even off the highway. You get off the highway and then you got to go deep, deep, deep into the property to even get to the. So once you get to the parking lot, this is how deep it goes. You get to Disney World, you get to the parking lot, you get out of the parking lot, you have your ticket. You either take a monorail further in to go to the park, or you take a boat further in to go to the park. So you can't even go there from the parking lot. And that's how far out he wanted to build it. Well, that's important for this story, because when you're looking at a place where you're trying to limit public exposure to the athletes and personnel, this sort of lends itself to that. It says, look, we have our own power. Like we don't need the outside world for anything. We bring in food, we have restaurants and cooks, we can build it. We have plenty of hotels for you to stay in. You don't have to leave the grounds. You can go right to the arena. You can go right back to the property and stay on. You don't have to go into Orlando at all. We're not busing you to another location. You can do it all right here. And everything that you need, food, accommodations, training, medical care, everything is right within this theme park area that's being closed right now because no one can ride Space Mountain. So that's why it lends itself to this. Now, I'll be honest with you. When I first heard this, I kind of thought this was kind of a pie in the sky kind of thing, right? That somebody came up with this idea. It seems to work. Maybe it got some sort of, that could be a possibility from some NBA guy. And then it got some legs, and then the legs took it to a point where people were openly considering it. If I never heard the idea again, I was not going to be surprised, because that's the one thing in the 10 weeks or whatever we've been doing this, trying to wait for sports to come back. One of the things that we've had to deal with is ideas coming and going, right? An idea hitting us. It's great. This is going to work. It's got this, and it's got the support of this. And then it just dies on the vine and nobody is doing anything about it. I mean, the list goes on. We're going to Arizona to play baseball. We're going to Arizona and Florida to play baseball. We're going to Arizona, Florida, and Texas to play baseball. We're going to North Dakota to play hockey. We're going to New Hampshire to play hockey. We're going to Vegas to play the NBA. We're going to North Dakota in the middle of nowhere to play the NBA, right? We've done it all with these things. Everything. We're going to an island to do UFC. We've done it all, right? And so when the idea of we're going to Disney World to play at Disney World for a month or whatever it is, I was like, all right, but I'll see it. You know, I'll believe it when I see it. Now it looks like we'll see it. Like, this is a legit idea that's being voted on. And it looks like the union is okay with this, as long as there's obviously safety protocol testing and all that other stuff. And it looks like it's going to happen.
Yeah, it looks like it's the best situation. I would think it's... out of all the scenarios that they've had, and go across all professional sports, this seems the most logical situation to do it in.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, you keep pairing Vegas, and I was like, how are you going to do Vegas? I mean, you're bringing a lot of single guys to Vegas. They're going to get that itch of, like, I need to leave the hotel. At least if you're at Disney World, there's probably... I mean, it's isolated enough that if they want to do something extracurricular, they can amongst each other. But at the same time, I mean, you know, they're not risking coming in contact with anything.
Right, exactly. That's the whole thing.
I almost picture Disney World right now to be a fortress.
Yeah, exactly. And it totally can be like that. And that makes a lot more sense, again, than Vegas. Because, again, it's here's the thing with Vegas. And this is what I wonder about Disney World, too. Like, Vegas is desperately trying to reopen. Right. Like, trying to get the casinos back open in some capacity. Right. I've been seeing videos of, like, this is what your new poker table is going to look like. Right. Where they've got plexiglass between the players and whatnot.
Yeah. So, but I love what somebody pointed out, though. They still haven't figured out how to sanitize the cards.
Yeah, I know. Right. You're still touching the same cards. Exactly. Exactly. So in that way, right, you can see there's a balancing act between Vegas going, look, we really appreciate you coming here and wanting to do this, but you know what? Eventually we want to open back up, like, as quickly as possible. So we don't know how that's going to work with your whole idea of keeping these guys isolated in a city where we're going to have open casinos downstairs. And you've got, you know, like 15, 16 NBA players per team that are going to want to have some down, that have some downtime. In this case, I wonder what the balancing act is from Disney World trying to open up again to the public to ride some rides and be family entertained, to the NBA trying to be like, let's play some games at the arenas with no fans and limited contact from the outside world. Now, I think they absolutely can do it that way. I mean, Disney can open up to locals only, for example, and still keep the hotels down. The arenas are not on the park property. They're not at Epcot. They're at the ESPN zone, ESPN Wild World of Sports complex that they have there. So they can bus them from these hotels where nobody's staying at except them to the arena, play, go back to the hotel for fun and frivolity, and then go back and play some more basketball. That's the only way I can think about it. Where the parks can still open up, you know, keep it local, keep the hotel shut down, or if you need a hotel or two, you still have a couple of them. But for all of that, you could still do it. Vegas, I don't think you can. If you have guys staying at the Bellagio and the Bellagio wants to open up its casino to the public, now you got a problem. Because if the casino's open to the public, it's going to be open to the NBA players, and they're going to want to go down there and play.
Right. And Vegas is going to do whatever Vegas wants to do.
Yeah, exactly. And now they might go, here's a separate room for the NBA players to gamble their heads off. They might do that, but it's still hard to miss the public, if you will. All right. Again, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, Ron with two N's. Glad you could be with us here on Memorial Day Monday on Wake Up Call and SB Nation Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now. Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, one other note on that NBA proposal. Again, they're going to vote on the possibility of going to Orlando and the Disney World Resort to play, but they haven't decided whether or not they're going to do the rest of the regular season, or at least some games of the regular season, to sort of get going and get the feel for it and whatnot before they go in as whatever postseason. They don't know if they're going to go do some regular season games or just jump right into the playoff. I will tell you what's going to be at stake, that local television rights, usually you have to get about 67% of the games in to fulfill your end of the contract. And I guarantee you they're going to want to do that if they can. I think they're going to try to say, look, we don't want to give money back or any for broadcasting rights. If we can squeeze in, some teams just need a handful of games to complete that goal. Some, you know, need a little bit more. But I think if you're the NBA, you go, look, let's get some regular season games in. Let's fulfill these local broadcasting contracts. And then let's wrap that thing up. And then we're good for the 2019-2020 season. And then we'll go right to the postseason. I think that that's the play that they're going to make for that. Again, I don't know how it's usually around 67%, but I'm sure each contract is different. And I guarantee you there's people in the New York office going through every single one going, okay, the Golden State Warriors need two more games on their lousy season and the Lakers need five or whatever it may be to make sure that their end of that, so they don't have to give money back to whatever local entity had their broadcasting rights for the regular season. But listen, they're talking about a vote and then possibly starting this up late June, early July. That's where we're heading with that. Again, timetable could be different, but that's where we're going with the NBA.